This holiday season, the Comics Podcast Network is proud to partner with the Hero Initiative and sponsor the Hero for the Holidays Drive. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. We encourage our listeners and fellow comic book fans to remember the Hero Initiative during the holiday season and consider making a donation to this organization. You can visit Hero's website at www.heroinitiative.org to find out more. To donate using a credit card or check through PayPal, send to heroauctions@aol.com. Anything you can give is more than enough. And we thank you for your support. Welcome to episode 50, part 2 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levitsky, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. It is part 2 of our mega episode 50, and we have plenty of guests and audio comments to share with you on comic book universes. We go everywhere else that we have not gone yet on this episode in this show. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 50, part 2 of Comic Timing.
Yay!
We're finally here. It's episode 50, part 2. Part 1, I hope you guys had a good time on that. That is the first two segments, and we got two more to go here on this one. All being recorded on a marathon night where I hope I have a voice by the end of this episode. And let me introduce the returning guest first. And he's a very familiar with being on multi-part episodes of Comic Timing, as he was part of the ginormous 52 episode we put together with John Mayo. He is David D. What's up, David?
I will promise to be less ginormous this time.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
And congratulations, 50 episodes and other podcasts and all the stuff that you do at your young age is quite a thing.
Thanks so much, man. I'm glad to have made it this far without dropping dead. So thank you.
Well, the night's young.
Right. We're also joined for the first time by Jason Wood, who is Wood on the comic forums. Jason, how are you?
I'm great, guys. Congrats, and thanks a lot for having me on for such a big episode. I'm pretty giddy about this.
Well, I wanted to have at least one guy on for the first time, and like you said, you're breaking your Comic Timing sherry tonight.
That's right. I'm a new guy, but an old guy. I'm the oldest one. I don't know how old David is, but I'm certainly an elder statesman compared to you two hosts.
I think I'm probably somewhere in the middle, but I play young.
Well,
if that helps.
It's been the running theme tonight, as we had Toby Cook and David Price on reminiscing about the early 80s and the 70s, and then we had Sean, Jim, and Freddie on, and now we got two oldies and two youngies on, so that'll be plenty of fun. And, of course, the co-host, not co-host, co-host, which cancels out the co-host, it's Brent Cassina.
I'm glad you got it right.
Hey, we're running with that. I actually kind of like that, an added bonus to the name. So, what's up?
I have to say,
I'm a little sad that your other regular one, DeJesus, isn't on, just because I think it's hilarious every time you guys say his name, the 50 part real name.
Oh, now you're going to make me bring that up next time.
Go ahead.
Fantastic.
Yeah, now that you brought
I'm happy
up.
To hear that.
Thanks, Blue.
hey, come on. Just the fact that at the beginning of that episode that I just put out, episode 48, both Rath and Juan going through their many different, stereotypical names of baseball players was fun. All right. Before we get going with the main episode, we actually had some audio comments on this episode. So let's actually focus on that first, and we'll have our responses to one of them right now. And we'll start off with a guy who's been on the show twice before, and that is Chris Chavez, Equinox on the Comic Forum. So here is Equinox's comments on comic book universes.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Chavez, Equinox from the forums and the shows. I want to start off by congratulating Ian and crew, Brent, Rafe, everybody else that's been participating in the show on the Big 5-0 for Comic Timing. Been a long time in the making, but well worth the respect and congratulations from everybody. Ian wanted to get some input as far as from everybody having to do with their takes on comic book universes. I've been around for quite a while. Yes, I'm in the 4-0 club and older. So that puts me, I guess, into that rarefied air where I was actually around before the crisis. No, not Infinite Crisis, before Crisis on Infinite Earths, or a.k.a. Everybody trying to pull the DC Universe back into one cohesive whole. I, for one, kind of had slowed down a little bit on picking up comics, but around that same time. But the covers to the Crisis on Infinite Earths comics actually kind of brought me back into it. Loved the George Perez artwork. Thought they were very intriguing. Picked up the books. I actually started picking up the series, not from the beginning. I actually started picking it up with the Death of the Flash issue, and then promptly picked up all the back issues and started picking up the rest of the series, as well as a couple tie-ins here and there. Didn't pick up the entire thing because I've never really been one for picking up everything that's associated with a series, no matter who the publisher's been. But really liked how the story kind of pulled everybody in and also made an attempt to bring the entire DC universe in under kind of one stable, as it were. I really think that the more that publishers can do to keep their universes kind of straight, cohesive, and, yes, let's use a dirty word, keep continuity in order, basically is much better for comic book fans as a whole. I think that publishers that really don't kind of try to bring characters that are all living, breathing, working, doing their superheroing, whatever you want to call it, all kind of in line with one another, working under the same rules, same towns. I mean, hell, if you've got the Hulk tearing up Fifth Avenue in his book, why shouldn't you have Spider-Man swinging over it in his issue going, damn, what the hell happened there? I really think that helps to flesh out the characters to make them seem like they could be real live breathing people with, you know, whatever their own goings on may be. But yes, I digress again. You know what, I've really been also open to the new universes that have come along in the meantime. Marvel with their new universe way back in the day. Some of those titles, I enjoyed some of the titles. Others, you know, Kickers Incorporated, maybe not so much. Cyforce, Star Brand, yeah, pretty good stuff. Wildstorm, but Wildstorm had a good thing going, especially when they kind of tried to bring all of their own stuff under one roof and kind of kick, you know, the rest of the Image creators kind of off to the side. But then again, you know, Jim Lee and company, I think, always had a little bit better knack for kind of a comics business end of things, maybe with the exception of Todd McFarlane. Todd McFarlane always had his own thing going as far as, you know, making money and, well, being Todd McFarlane. Image has got their own thing kind of going on right now. You've got many multiple universes. They're kind of acting as a clearinghouse for publishers. And while I really like what they're doing as far as the individual books or the individual books that they're presenting, you know, I really can't see them kind of being a DC or a Marvel where everything that happens there happens in the same universe and the same planet. Marvel, I really haven't had a problem with as far as, you know, continuity-wise. I mean, anything that, you know, you would have associated with DC, you know, different characters, different kind of backstories, what have you, they explained out by having kind of alternate worlds available. You had Counter-Earth, you had the Negative Zone, but all those were part of the Marvel 616. Wasn't really until you got later into Marvel's history that you got things like Excalibur with the Cross Time Saga. You know, Earth 616 was designated that. I think, God, I could be wrong, but, you know, because of stuff going on with, you know, like your Captain Britons and your Excaliburs, maybe that was writer's preference or what have you, but you know what, it worked because kind of everything kind of defaulted back to, you know, the Marvel Universe. Everything else was kind of a, you know, let's dip our toes into the water and see how things kind of go over in these other universes. From what I've read of the Exiles, kind of Marvel's kind of cross-time hero team right now, they kind of do the same type of thing. They kind of jump from universe to universe, but still there's always that main Marvel universe that they can always come back to, as it were. But anyway, you know what, again, I just love comics in general. I really enjoyed talking about them. Really enjoyed talking with all of you guys about them as well. So again, I really want to give props and thanks out to Ian for putting the show out, you know, on as regular basis as he's able to. I know, you know, things come up, and he does a great job and a great service to everybody by putting this out there. So anyway, Chris Chavez, Equinox out, and I'll see you guys all on the forums later.
All right, there you go. There are thoughts from Chris Chavez, Equinox, on the forums. So let's just dive right into it. And I guess I'll ask Jason first, since he's a newcomer. Any thoughts on Equinox's words? He mentioned a lot about, I guess, the traveling the verses, as it were, and also talked a bit about DC. What do you think about his comments?
Well, he was quite lengthy, so I guess he stole a little bit of our thunder there, but... Well, first, I guess I should say that you guys may know this from the forums, but I've been reading Marvel Comics for 25 years. I'm actually pretty new to the DC universe. In fact, the first DC comic, you know, absent things like, you know, some of the classic Batman stories and whatnot, but the first recent DC stuff I had read was actually Identity Crisis, and then I read Infinite Crisis, and from there, basically, I've bought years' worth of back issues and trades and tried to catch up. So I kind of come at the DC world in a much, you know, wet behind the ears, greener perspective than I do the Marvel Universe. So I guess I don't have a very strong feeling about whether DC was better with one universe or now with the 52 versus, you know, the old multiverse. I mean, I've enjoyed most of the storytelling. I thought that that 52 was a fantastic series. I enjoyed that. I thought the reveal at the end and the return of the multiverse was a cool concept. I haven't been enjoying Countdown as much, so I guess we'll see what happens there, what Final Crisis is, and what that really means for DC's identity therein. On the Marvel side, I think he made a good point, which is to say that, you know, Marvel's sort of been a little more open to the notion of just having these alternative universes, right, but none of them are within continuity, you know, or very few of them have ever been within continuity, and they've kind of just explained those away. It's almost like an Elseworlds, you know, approach from the DC perspective. Joe Quesada, you know, he despises the term Earth 616. In fact, he recently said he wished the term didn't exist. But the fact is, you know, we as fans have adopted that. And I think certainly even, you know, Exiles, as Equinox mentioned, you know, travels the all the different multiverses and acknowledges 616 as the main one. So, you know, I'm a fan of the concept. I mean, I just think from a Marvel perspective, though, they've been much cleaner about the main universe and not mucking that up too often. I guess every now and then they've mucked it up on the mutant side of things with Age of Apocalypse or Days of Future Past. But, you know, at the end of the day, they usually find a way to clean all that up with some kind of retcon.
I actually really like the term Earth 616 because it differentiates itself from DC. Like, if Marvel were to just call their regular universe Earth 1, well, that'd sort of be repeating what they did. You know, the fact that they're saying that there is a multiverse out there, that we're not the only one, we're not the one that started everything, we're just the one where the adventures take place. And that's why we're Earth 616. We're just in there, in the middle of it all. I really like that idea. David, what about you? The thoughts on Equinox's comments?
I think it sounds like he covered all of the universes in that comment. We'd probably call it a night. No, I'm joking. No, it was very thorough. And I think that one of the things that Chris brought up and that Wood has commented on as well, that it's funny, you know, I personally have kind of a love-hate relationship with comic book universes, and I'll probably get more into that in a minute, but to start on the love side, on the positive side, there is something when you have a long publishing history and you have all of those, you know, otherwise imaginary stories and alternate places, when all of those become accessible in the way that, you know, the post-52 DC universe has, and the way that the Marvel universe in books like the Crosstime Caper that Wood referenced in Excalibur, which is an old favorite of mine, you know, once you have all of these other places, these other versions that are out there and, you know, in the toy box and other places that you can take the story, I think there's a lot of potential. So that's one thing that I think that can be great about the volume of stories and the variety of stories and alternate places and universes and layers of reality and heavens and hells and other planes of existence. You know, it's like so much of that stuff, even if it was only to satisfy one deadline and create one goofy story back in the, you know, 60s or 50s or 40s, becomes the kind of thing that a current writer can pick up and really have a lot of fun with. So I think on the plus side, the volume and variety and, you know, nearly infinite potential that a long-lived universe has can be great. And that is something that, you know, that I think both DC and Marvel do well and that they shouldn't be afraid of. You know, if it's, I guess it gets back to the love-hate thing. It's like those moments where a universe feels really tight and cooking along. You know, I know that, that Chris brought up a lot of stuff about continuity. There can be something really satisfying when, you know, all the ducks are in a row in such a way where your imagination feels like I'm there and it's a real place and, you know, that sort of verisimilitude kicks in. You know, it's a thing that in our past discussions we talked about really liking about 52 is that because it kind of got a chance to carve out its own year, it could be really tight and thorough. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the love part of the love-hate side. You know, the hate part of it is that because there's so many writers and so many years and such a volume of things that all have to take place in a kind of shared mental piece of real estate, there's going to be so many places that you're brought out of the story by a little mistake or by a contradiction or, you know, or even, you know, while I agree that some continuity stuff in Marvel is cleaner, there's always going to be that problem that virtually every story has happened in the past, I don't know what it is, 10 or 15 years, like that Marvel is kind of constantly living out this same slowly moving period of time.
Right.
That makes it kind of, you know, and it's one of the things that you don't want to tug at the threads or the whole thing will come apart, but it's one of those things where you start to kind of have a bit of a problem going, you know, there's that part where you have to stop and kind of remember what the current, like, okay, so was Tony Stark in the, was he in the Korean War, or was it Vietnam, or is
right,
it the Gulf
fair.
War now? You know, there's just those moments where you have to kind of remember, you know, or you think to yourself, like, shit, man, Peter Parker had really bad 20s. His teens and 20s were, I mean, damn, you know, that's just, every day was something, you know, like, what, you know, like, you look at his day planner and be like, Tuesday, October 10th, I was attacked by
dies,
Wednesday,
right.
October 11th, you know, you start to break it down and think, man, and that was all in his sophomore year of college, those 20 years of continuity, you know what I mean? So it's like, there's that part of the suspension of disbelief that gets harder the more specific things get.
Well,
you know what I mean? And that, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just already thinking in my head, I know I'm going to be old when I see on the paper that Iron Man's origin include him chasing Osama bin Laden and the Taliban.
That's right. When he was in the second space war of, you know, things like that. He's still got that bad heart, but man, I tell you, he's you know, he's the eternal soldier. He's been to all of them.
Right.
And he had a bad heart through all of them, and he, you know. And again, that's part of the, you know, that's part of the fun, though, too. I mean, there's also something that can be great when a writer comes along, you know, that finds a way to kind of freshen up a long-lived character and make it current again. I mean, you know, we're playing along with them as readers, but I guess that's what kind of comes back to my love-hate relationship is that the moment, you know, it's hard enough to have the suspension of disbelief for a single fictional story and title and character, mm-hmm. but the more they cross over with each other, the harder it all gets because
definitely.
They're all having to share. You know, it's kind of like the moment you live in a world that has a Superman in it, how does everything in that world not happen in relation to that Superman?
Agreed. Yeah.
You know, it starts to create those kinds of questions like, man, couldn't Superman just go over to Gotham and take care of all that, like, in a day? You know, it just leads to those sort of questions that I don't bother with at the age that I'm at, but I know as a kid, or even as a teenager, would sometimes take me out of it because you would
right.
just, there'd be that kind of, you know, you're superior to everything teenager part of your personality that just is like, man, that's lame. You know, Superman would totally go and, you know, everybody that escapes from Gotham, he'd put him right back in. And, you know, the part of you that wants to try to make sense of everything gets frustrated the more you're expected to imagine all of these people living in the same world, you know?
Right. I get what you're saying entirely there. Brent, what about you? What's your take on everything?
I think Superman doesn't solve all the world's problems in a day because there are other people to do it. I think Batman claims Gotham as his own and said, fuck you, Superman, it's mine.
Hey, you don't want to mess with a dude who has absolutely no powers and yet still keeps people in check.
And it pulls out a bone saw when he's doing an autopsy.
Right. Oh, God. Yeah, thanks for reminding me about that. I'd sort of taken that from my mind, and you just had to bring it back in. Thanks, Brent. Thanks.
That was the best panel ever.
Oh man,
that's how serious I am.
Right. But I mean, it is a good point that you wonder, you know, how Superman doesn't go and do that, and yet they brought that up before. Like, I think the arc was called Emperor Superman. where he actually tried to rule the world. He was being controlled by somebody, obviously, but he decided that I'm going to be the guy who runs everything. I'm going to be the guy who stands in there and tries to make sure that everything goes my way, and that means I'm the right way, whether you like it or not. But that's not what we need in the DC Universe, because that's going to take all the fun out of it, you know? I mean, that's why he hasn't done this more often.
And that's a pretty common theme. I mean, that's happened in the Marvel Universe as well. I mean, Thor, you know, which was just recently relaunched in his, I guess it was the third volume, the one prior to this relaunch, you know, he decided, okay, I'm just going to start running the world as well. And it became kind of a quasi-religious issue. And, you know, people took up arms against him because, you know, he wasn't a Judeo-Christian god. And they thought, you know, so, I mean, that's a very common theme. I mean, something that that David mentioned really resonates, which is to say that, you know, I think as comic book fans, suspension, there's that fine line that we want it to be believable enough that it doesn't insult our intelligence. And I think that gets progressively harder to deal with as you get older. But at the same point in time, I think to be a superhero comic book fan like we are, there's a tremendous amount of suspension of disbelief that you have to buy into, right? Anything from exactly, I mean, Batman can hold his own against Superman, which obviously, if you just think about physics, that should never happen, but we allow for it. And, you know, in the Marvel world, Wolverine, you know, there's a story going on right now where Wolverine was essentially trying to be Captain America's sidekick back in World War II, and yet, you know, here it is, and they were, you know, battling alongside Nick Fury, and yet Nick Fury is basically hasn't aged at all, and the last time I checked, he was supposed to be a normal human. So, you know, it's, I mean, these kind of things we just kind of accept as long as they're told in good stories, you know, we can kind of look past them. It's just part and parcel of being a comic book fan, I think.
Well, how about the fact that Franklin Richards is supposed to be about 8 years old, and I think in the last 5 years, Scott Lang's daughter has aged like 6 years.
Right.
Nick Fury Franklin Richards have dates to the Lazarus Pits.
I think that's the only explanation you can give, really. This brings up a good question, and actually going back to what David said about Spider-Man, what they're going to be doing now with him with this whole One More Day thing and Brand New Day after that is they appear to be sort of rebooting Spider-Man in a way. You know, they're going to bring him back to, and again, this is just from what I've seen from the solicitations. I could be wrong on this when it actually comes out, but it looks like they're going to try and make him back to being, you know, the single bachelor with a whole bunch of people around him and less care, less worry about, you know, like, oh, no, am I going to make it home to my wife? Instead, oh, no, am I going to make it home for my tests? That sort of thing. Do we need that in a Spider-Man book? Because that's part of the continuity, that's part of the universe, because we've seen all these stories take place in the Marvel Universe where Spider-Man was one way, and now he's going to be something else. Does this muck up the Marvel U by trying to reset Spider-Man like this? And Brent, we'll start with you.
I think it does mess it up. I mean, Spider-Man has recently had so much interaction with the New Avengers, the Secret Avengers and whatnot, House of M and all that. He's had so much interaction recently in his own book with the regular Marvel Universe that going back on all that is just going to mess up everything else. I mean, it's easy for Joe Quesada to say, okay, well, Tony Stark is not going to remember Mary Jane if that's what happened. Speculation from the lying in the gutters thing, it kind of said what was going on.
Right.
But, you know, it just ruins everything else. I mean, they can call it off as Mary Jane in respect to the rest of the Marvel Universe is just a minor character and doesn't really matter. But to Spider-Man readers, she does. And Spider-Man readers read Spider-Man, and they might also read New Avengers, Mighty Avengers, and, you know, everything else that's out there. So instead of being just Spider-Man readers, they're Marvel readers, which, you know, makes them care about the continuity. So I think it's kind of a half-assed way of them not being able to think up new stories. And I thought they were telling fine stories with him being married. You know, I didn't really like the separation, but JMS kind of ended that once you hopped on the book. So that was kind of nice. And I liked that the fact that they were living in Avengers Tower for a long time. And May and Jarvis kind of had this weird relationship that was really weird and freaky because they're old. But it added a new dimension to the Spider-Man books, and now they're going back on that.
Do you fear it, Brent? Brent, do you fear their love? Does it scare you?
I fear their love because I read Ultimates 2, and I still think Jarvis is gay.
All right. Okay.
So you think that
Jarvis is fooling himself and May is his beard, and he's just not. You want the best for Jarvis, but you think he's lying to himself.
Yeah.
Look, just because he's been a butler for the past 30 years doesn't mean he's gay.
It's true. I will agree with Brent that elderly love is a frightening thing. So.
Well, I'm sure Tony Stark couldn't handle four women at the same time while drunk, so he handed Jarvis one once or twice, hopefully. Can't be a total prick.
Brent, do you think about these scenarios a lot? I mean, you know. You're a much
cranky. I'm going back to that teenage.
You've broken it down into math, and four is a very specific number. So I just didn't know whether this is something that. I'm sorry, we're digressing.
Oh yes, but it wouldn't be comic timing unless we digressed at least once.
No, but I do think it's messing up the rest of Marvel continuity.
Right. No, I agree.
And I think it's a cop-out.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. I mean, Spider-Man's made leaps and bounds over the years, and you're sort of resetting things when you don't really have to. But we've known for a while now Joe Quesada is against him having a married relationship. He'd rather him be single. We're just going to have to deal with that. David, does it ruin the Marvel U for you to have Spider-Man be reset like this and everybody else will be the same?
It's a great question. I mean, I should point out that I'm not familiar with Brand New, One More, One Day More, whatever. I stopped after Back in Black, so I'm not familiar with the specifics of like the last couple of issues that have come out. To the general question, I would say if you're going to reset Spider-Man, reset all of them. You know, it's like I feel like, and which I'm up for. You know, it's like either do that or let him grow old and have babies and have, you know, children and have Aunt May die, and let him go through. It's got to be kind of one or the other, in my opinion. I mean, if it's a thing that has probably pushed me a little more towards the DC side in the last 5 years or so of my reading. I mean, I grew up as a Marvel kid, and then I was out, and then when I came back, DC, kind of like what Wood said, was this kind of new thing for me to discover. I love that there are multiple generations of heroes, and that people, you know, at least until the next reboot, people get a chance to go through multiple stages of their life. And when you look at the history of a character, they, you know, had distinctive periods, and they get somewhere, and they have children, and they have divorces, and they, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's like you kind of feel like it's a soap opera that has had a lot of steps along the way for a character.
Right.
By the way, am I echoing terribly?
No.
I can hear that, but oh, good. All right. I know Grandpa's on a landline here, so I'm ruining the show.
A little bit of an echo, yeah. That's
a little bit.
Okay.
I will move closer towards the cordless phone broadcasting.
There we go.
Thingy. So sorry about that. I feel like it doesn't ruin it, I guess, to reset, but it would create more trouble if you're going to reset Spider-Man, if that indeed is what they're doing, and you leave everybody else not reset. You know, I feel like you either should do the DC thing and be really consciously metatextual, and you know your readers are playing along, so there's those moments where you say, hey, readers, we've kind of made a big mess, you know, and like we bought these other companies, we threw these characters in, and we can't figure it out, and you know, we're gonna start over. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's gonna be great. Just stick with us. I feel like either do that, and hell, I'm up for it. Or let people grow old and get married and have babies and bury their parents and their guardians and, you know, retire. And either one or the other. I think if you just do it with Spider-Man, you're kind of in the middle of those two choices. And I think that will frustrate readers because, you know, as we've been talking, we as readers, we're up for playing along, but the rules need to be clear.
Right, yeah.
And, I think if you were to somehow reboot a Spider-Man, I understand that from the corporate point of view, you know, it's like television writing, you know, you find a formula that works. So I understand where Quesada's coming from. You find a formula that works, and the further you get away from it, the more you begin to doubt whether that thing that made people like Spider-Man to begin with is still present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you have Mulder and Scully kiss, and suddenly people don't care about the show anymore.
Right.
You know, because what they you realize, oh, actually they were tuning in because they loved the tension before they kiss. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I can understand the fear of that change, but I either say go for that change and commit to it and let time pass or reboot everybody.
Well, I actually kind of think of when major changes were made to Green Arrow and when they were made to The Flash. Most specifically, mm-hmm. when Green Arrow first came back to life, and he only remembered mm-hmm. part of his life, and you had a different mm-hmm. character going there, and eventually he got his memories back, he got his life back, and he became the Green Arrow we knew. Just like when Wally got his life reset, and people around him didn't remember he was The Flash.
Yeah.
It didn't work for me nearly as well as when everybody knew it, because it was just a
sure,
single...
Because you remember. Year. It's frustrating
right.
to be sitting on this information that you have, mm-hmm. and it makes all the characters that somehow are ignoring or don't know these things seem dumb.
Definitely.
Because you're out there, and you've read it. You know you've read it.
Right.
You know, it's like those people that kind of go, hey, where's that baby? You know, because you've read it. And we can stuff it back under the couch, but it's a little frustrating compared to the mea culpa of, hey, we sure did screw up. So we're just gonna start over, eh? Do over, you know.
Baby May, come back.
Yeah, wow, you just said mea culpa, and I'm on this episode now. I'm sure. I'm glad I'm on this episode because every episode you've been on, I've not been on, and it's been called the greatest episode ever. So now that you used mea culpa and I'm on here, I'll be on what somebody calls the greatest episode ever of Comic Timing.
Fantastic.
Thank you, David.
We do our best. Thanks. It's the gas. It's the gas that's seeping into my apartment.
Yeah, yeah. I do agree with you though that about Marvel. I think Marvel's in a bind with itself. It seems like they don't really want to change anything from the way Stan Lee had it in the 60s. Every character has to be the same person. Iron Man's always going to be Tony Stark. Spider-Man's always going to be Peter Parker. And it's going to stay the same constantly. And so that's why they keep having to reboot themselves. And eventually I think they're going to get themselves into a real bind. Well, they'll have to have the Watcher come in and reset stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I have a pretty major problem with it. I mean, I think Ian, you said, would it ruin the Marvel Universe for me? It certainly doesn't ruin it. I mean, I'll forge on as I have many times before, and you know, I've been disappointed before, and I've kept reading. But I mean, the one thing that strikes me about all this is that it's kind of silly because, I mean, this is what the Ultimate Universe was all about, right? I mean, we created the Ultimate Universe because they were looking at the, you know, the main Marvel Universe and saying to themselves, if we want to attract a new audience that doesn't want to be burdened by, you know, 2.5 decades of continuity, let's just start a new universe with the same core characters and we can tell fresh stories. And, you know, I've recently dropped all the Ultimate titles, but the one that was the most consistent by far was Ultimate Spider-Man.
Agreed.
And the reason was, first of all, we had the same artist and writer, obviously. Bendis and Bagley were on it for 110, 111 issues. But the other thing was, it reset Spider-Man, right? He was Peter Parker, the geeky kid in high school that had the crush, and he also happened to have awesome superpowers. And, you know, I think they told great stories that were very reminiscent of what made Spider-Man such a captivating character back when he was created. And I think it was great because you had Peter Parker, the original, aging and becoming an adult in the main Marvel Universe, which I think makes sense. And you got those stories in the Ultimate Universe if you were really craving them. And even now, there are other places. I mean, you have the Marvel Adventures books, which tell, you know, very kid-friendly, but you know, very entertaining basic stories about Spider-Man that we all know and love from the past. So I just think it's much better if they just move on, and I think it's absurd that they reset it. I mean, Spider-Man he's in the Avengers right now. He's got his own titles. It's really absurd to reset him to a point that I think just it does debase the core universe, which is the one thing that really just drives me nuts. Leave the 616 alone.
Right. Yeah, no, and I think that's a great point about, you know, for those that want that fresh start and that modern entry point and things like that, you know, that's what the Ultimate Universe was made for. I mean, that's the one that was supposed to be the easy one for a younger reader to grab in their local Target or whatnot as this not continuity-laden way into a very modern Spider-Man. Because I think another point is that, you know, I certainly get what you're saying, Brent, about how people want to kind of hold fast to that Stan Lee formula, and there's such a reverence for the original concept of these characters that people were afraid from getting too far away from that original concept. But we should also remember who it was that Stan Lee was creating these characters for in the 1960s, and then let's look at the four of us. In the 1960s, it was Stan Lee kind of going, "Hey, kids, here's a kid just like you," you know? And now I'm sure amongst the four of us on this phone, the median age of the four of us is probably 30. Or 30-something, you know? And, you know, and I know that some people think that, you know, cites the death knell and the death march of all comics as a medium. I don't agree with that. But personally, there's some kind of teenage characters I like, but I, at age 31, am a lot less drawn into, boy, I sure hope I can beat up the Vulture before I have my math test, you know?
Right.
I hope that girl in my physics class likes me. Like, I'm actually much more interested and fascinated in a Spider-Man that's married. It's just more interesting to me, like a Spider-Man that's balancing his superheroics with his personal life in the same way that a grown-up balances their work life against their personal life. Like, for those of us that may have committed to and have stuck with some of these titles since we were kids, it's kind of fascinating, maybe selfish, and I guess this is selfish of me, but it's kind of, I kind of love the idea that I'm growing up with these characters, and if they actually kept pace with me, that wouldn't it be kind of fascinating to watch Spider-Man deal with being a parent, retiring, all that stuff. And then for the couple generations behind us, keep making more Ultimate lines, keep rebooting a title that is always that entry point in the same way that the movies and the video games and things like that will have that young person entry point. But let's see what happens when that soap opera gets to last for decades and gets to progress through decades. I mean, how interesting might that be, to just have this story that has so much of a volume, so many stories to it, but keeps progressing, keeps getting somewhere, in the same way that we, in our own lives, keep getting to different phases and find ourselves, you know, responding to different elements of the stories that we read, you know, like parenthood or marriage or things like that.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
No, it makes perfect sense to me, and right away I'm thinking that by resetting Spider-Man, what you're doing is you're creating a redundancy, because you have a Spider-Man that is single, that is a teenager, that's living his life as it goes in the Ultimate Universe. By resetting Spider-Man in the regular Marvel U, you're pretty much leaving no reason to have an Ultimate Spider-Man. And I love Ultimate Spider-Man. I love the series that's been going on in there. I've been reading it since it started. I have every issue from 1 until now in my collection. And I still read Spider-Man. I still read Amazing. I'm definitely still going to be reading Amazing as it comes out 3 times a month, because I find that to be a intriguing idea to me. But I would have found it even better had they given me the Spider-Man that I've grown to know over the past 10, 15 years that I've been reading Spider-Man. In fact, what this screams of to me is when they swept the Clone Saga under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
When they decided that this is not the Spider-Man we want anymore. Sure, we've been doing stories with him for ages, but let's restart things. And they restarted things with J. Michael Straczynski. With his run, they reset everything. He wasn't with Mary Jane at first. Eventually, he got back with Mary Jane, but it was still interesting enough. I wasn't a total fan of everything J. Michael Straczynski did, but he created a brand new Spider-Man for us to learn while still remembering enough about the previous run. What we get here is they're saying to us again, well, the only way we're ever going to get a Spider-Man that everybody in the bullpen enjoys is if every time a writer leaves a book, we're going to restart that character. This is the way it's feeling like to me. You don't need a second restart in a matter of 5 years. It's just not the way you go about things. It kind of makes the entire run feel cheap.
Yeah, I mean, as a longtime reader, you want to feel like the longevity and the investment that you've made is going to be something that's rewarded rather than feeling like it's all disposable. I mean, it sort of all is disposable, but it doesn't have to feel that way. And I feel like anytime there's talk of a reset, particularly like a reset that brings the character back to who they were originally, to me it also underlines some of the tension between books that star big corporate iconic properties that sell lunchboxes and movies and video games and cartoons and breakfast cereal or, you know, flamethrowers, whatever it may be that they're selling Spider-Man on, compared with books, and kind of getting back to my love-hate relationship with superhero universes, compared with books where each monthly installment is the only place where this character exists and anything can happen. You know, there's a part of me as I've gotten older that finds myself less excited by each new issue of a big, famous, important corporate property like a Spider-Man, a Wolverine, a Batman, a Superman, because there's so many suits involved in what's going to happen that I don't open that book feeling like, you know what, anything could happen, in the way that I feel when I read something like Why the Last Man, Walking Dead, and, you know, I don't read Invincible, so I'll guess Invincible's like that, or Astro City, books where there's an auteur feeling, and at any moment, no character may be safe, somebody might change entirely, somebody might lose a limb, some entire storyline might end, the story might go to a completely different place. It can reinvent itself because there's so many fewer people that have to say yes to a decision than a whole boardroom full of people that are protecting a corporate property. So I feel like what we're talking about, this notion of, well, we better reset Spider-Man so that somebody that sees the movie won't be confused by his wife, underlines some of the artistic frustrations in dealing with a character that is such a big piece of a company's bottom line. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, I think that's a great point, David. I mean, you know, as I focus on the business side quite a bit just because it's an occupational hazard. But, you know, as we've talked about, I mean, Marvel obviously isn't even Marvel Comics anymore. It's Marvel Entertainment. You know, the lion's share of their revenues now come from licensing toys and their, you know, their budding movie production deal that they have. You know, they're making their own movies now. So,
Like, I remember you had a great post on the forum about that meeting that you attended where you were presented to as a potential shareholder or shareholder of Marvel.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that, you know, publishing was kind of the last thing on the list. Oh, and by the way, we still do a few comic books, but like
exactly.
The
way
Marvel's
it works is
website, they present themselves as an entertainment company. It's not a comic publisher. Sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
We make Ode de Toilette, and we make comics.
Right.
Yeah. Puppet Show and Spinal Tap. I'm sorry, Wood. I derailed what you were saying. Please go ahead.
No, I was just going to reiterate. I mean, it was kind of baffling as a comic fan because, you know, and it's the way it always is with these things. But it was essentially Peter Cunha, who was the CEO and now is the vice chairman of Marvel, sitting up on a stage with the research analyst that covers Marvel for the investment bank that this conference was holding. And, you know, he asked him questions. It was sort of what we call a fireside chat, where he asks him questions that he thinks the audience wants to hear about the business, and he answers them. And, you know, like I said, they went down the business. Of course, they started with the movies, and then they went to the toy licensing. And then he said, okay, and I guess we'll spend a few minutes on publishing. And he groaned, and he said, I know, you know, steady old, you know, publishing, but hey, it's got great margins, and it's still a pretty good business. And I just rolled my eyes and thinking, oh, God, I mean, this is what we've come to, right? Where we basically have to, as comic fans, hope and pray that the value of the licenses are such that they'll feel compelled to continue and throw us a bone by publishing 50, 60 titles a month for us. So,
right.
But luckily, though, it's as I've said many times, it's both for DC and Marvel. The good news as fans is, even though we are a dying breed, the profitability of the publishing unit is so enormous in both that there's really no incentive for them not to publish comics for us, because we keep buying them and paying just about any price for them. So
it's kind of interesting how Marvel's sort of forgotten how they got where they got. You know, like I mean, we're the fans that decided to pick up their stuff and made it possible for them to make the movies they make, to make the animated series they make, to make the toys they make. Because without us flocking to it and saying, hey, people will read this stuff, they wouldn't have gotten the idea, maybe we could turn this into other things. And now it's like comics are on the bottom of their radar.
Or they become sort of the research and development department. You know, it's
right,
like,
right.
You know, there's a part of them that it's like, well, hey, you know, it's a profitable part of our business, and hey, every 20 years or so, they come up with something like a Venom, and that sure does make some good toys. You know, it's, I mean, I'm sounding very cynical. I mean, I suppose to try to be positive, the fact that the publishing side isn't expected to make the lion's share of the money allows it to continue to be, I mean, I think that's the thing that's really helped maintain its high quality. Like, because it's not so much the thing that's got to make the bucks, it can, they, you know, comics, and there's so many of them from DC and Marvel that I like, can be the thing that they are, you know, and they can cater to the people who actually read them. We get to be a subculture that are actually catered to in a way that we won't ever find in the really big mainstream media properties.
Right.
You know, a particular, an individual issue, say, of a new Avengers or a JSA can be distinctive and interesting and nuanced in a way that a Justice League movie or an X-Men movie never will be.
Right.
Because, you know, there don't have to be those concessions to, well, you know, we tested that ending, but just didn't test well. You know, like, writers and artists in comics have far fewer boundaries between what they create and what gets published than the bigger mass media do. So, I mean, hey, if selling cartoons and lunchboxes are going to keep the comics going, great. All right, as long as we're getting the stuff we like, right?
Yeah, and that actually brings me to another question I wanted to ask everybody here, because we haven't done this on any of the calls yet, surprisingly enough. Just going into the movies and stuff like that, as a comic book fan, which are you more of a fan of? The perfect transition from comic book universe to movie universe, or stories that are based on the comic book universe that you're a fan of, but they then take it into an entirely new direction? Like, for example, with Justice League, I'm sure we're going to get a Justice League movie that has Justice League characters, but not a story that's straight from the comics, where in the universe, the world that was created in 300, we get a perfect adaptation from comic book to screen. Which do you prefer? We'll start with you, Brent.
I prefer the second one there, where the movie universe takes different things from the comic universe and makes it its own. I think the best, and obviously the best example of that was Batman Begins, where they're picking and choosing the best elements of the comics over, you know, the 60-year span or, you know, plus that Batman's been around, and kind of mixing it all together and then seeing what they've got and then molding it so that they have the best product possible for the widest audience. I think that's what works best. Part of the problem with the Hellboy movie, as great as it was, is that it was so faithful to everything that I don't think as many people latched onto it or could have gotten hooked onto it as was possible, you know. I mean, it did okay in the box office. It certainly wasn't a huge blockbuster like Batman or Spider-Man was, but, you know, it did well enough for itself. But I think part of the reason why it didn't do great was because they stuck so faithfully and Guillermo del Toro didn't want to like change anything for any reason whatsoever. I mean, it strengthened the movie for us comic fans, but I think as a whole it kind of weakened it.
Right.
You know what I mean? But the problem with that one, that example is that there's really only like one thing to draw from and Hellboy hasn't been around for forever.
I'm all for you on that. Jason?
I think I'm pretty much in Brent's camp, but with the caveat being, I think what you don't want to do is, again, if at the end of the day you want to produce a good movie, and I think to do that you have to let the writers and the director have a vision of their own. I think you can't, it can't be a completely corporate formulaic thing, or you're going to get in trouble, which I think we've seen in movies like Fantastic Four, which obviously had a ton of potential and really didn't deliver. I think the best, and I think, you know, on the DC side, certainly Batman Begins, on the, you know, Marvel side, I think your first Spider-Man, what I loved about those movies, and I think many people did that were comic book fans, is they give you the winks and the nods to the fanboys to let you know, hey, we get where you guys are coming from, but they keep the stories broad enough that they appeal to people that don't have years and years of continuity. I mean, two examples that come to mind are, you know, obviously we meet Harvey Dent, or we see mention of Harvey Dent in the Batman movie. And so if you're a Batman fan, you say, oh, that's great. You know, I wonder if he's going to be Two-Face at some point. You kind of get excited. And on the Spider-Man side, of course, we meet Dr. Connors. And it's been three movies now, and there's really been no hint of Dr. Connors becoming the Lizard. And, you know, and there's talk that he might be in the fourth movie. But the point is for three movies, you know, he was kind of this bit character. But we as fans said, oh, wow, that's a guy that's going to be one of his big-time villains at some point. But what those two movies really did were they told great stories, right? And they were tight, well-written stories that had a beginning, end, and a finish, and, right, and it paid off at the end. So right. I think that's really the key. I mean, the one that, as a Marvel fan, the one that sticks in my crawl is the Hulk movie. And again, it gets back to, I'm fine with telling a Hulk story that doesn't stick strictly to the, you know, the all-too-familiar gamma explosion that we all know, you know, is his base history. But when you start making him part chameleon and it becomes an art film, and then he has a dad who's the absorbing. I mean, it's just, it's so off the beaten track that then I think you lose that core fan base of comic geeks, and then you have a real problem because we don't want to come back for more, and we shit can it all over the internet, and it gets bad buzz. And I think you're seeing Marvel react to that by actually redoing the Hulk, what, 3 years after the last one came out, all over again with a whole new, you know, Ed Norton playing the Hulk now, and I have high hopes that they get it right this time. So I think I'm somewhere in between. I just want them to tell a good story, but just don't bastardize the franchise such that we all moan and groan.
I half expect that the next time they do the Hulk, it's just going to be a dude in green paint running around screaming. It's like,
I'm really angry.
I'm the Hulk. I want to hand in my TPS reports, but my damn boss won't open his door. Roar! And you know, you see him like running and trying to knock down doors, but it ain't going to happen. That's kind of what I felt like when I saw Ang Lee's Hulk. It's like, okay, there's a character, he's green, he's called the Hulk. There's some characters I know, but everything else is different. And that's not what we need from a comic book movie. That's the reason why the Hulk TV movies with, you know, Daredevil as like a ninja and Thor is like a construction worker, you know, didn't really work at all because they were just dumbing down the universe. What I liked about the Spider-Man universe is that we had the basic gist of Spider-Man, but morphed into a movie world. Just like we got with Batman, just like we got with Superman, it's enough of what we know, but a different story. And that's what makes movies so compelling to me. And I hope we get more of that in the future. David, do you agree?
You're all wrong about the Hulk movie. They got it right the first time, but you're good people, so you're allowed to be wrong, and I forgive you.
Oh boy.
I forgive you, and Ang Lee's forgotten all about it. He's moved on to greener pastures.
Right.
Now, we don't have time to get into all that, but yeah, all of the core points that you make, I think, are I agree with. Yeah, I mean, it's a completely different storytelling language, and you know, movies have different strengths and different ways that they tell stories than comics. So I'm always up for even radical reinterpretations if, as Wood was saying, though they come from a genuine storytelling place on the part of the director and the screenwriter and the other filmmakers, rather than just being the results of test marketings and shrewd calculations. Like some of the best comic movies that I've enjoyed, you know, say the first X-Men movie, Batman Begins, things like that, felt like they had a really strong storytelling voice, and I didn't care about any of the little changes. The little winks are fun, and I think it's smart to put those in, but you can make it as different
as you want, as long as it's a good movie. I couldn't, you know, I'm not at all of the mindset that you should make sort of slavish adaptations. Comic panels and sequential art, they're not storyboards, you know what I mean? And storyboards are a reference on the set. They're not meant to be the director. You know, I mean, I didn't see 300, but Sin City, I read Sin City comics back in the day and really enjoyed them. The movie struck me as kind of really cold. Like, I couldn't get into the movie. It was kind of darker and colder and less human and didn't have any heart to it because, you know, it's like it just felt like it was the comic brought to life, but they, in doing that, didn't take advantage of the things you get with live actors, with moving images and, you know, and all of the things that are in a film storytelling language. So instead, it just had kind of a coldness of a comic without the part of my imagination that animates that comic. And, you know, to me, that was what happens when you are a bit too reverent and slavish to the source material. So I say, you know, hire great directors and screenwriters and give them the, you know, give them permission to take it a different way and try to make it a good movie. You know, I mean, I would rather see it done well and see something interesting and new than go in with a checklist of going, oh, well, they got that right.
Right.
Oh, no,
right.
They screwed that up. Oh, okay, they satisfied me on that one. You know, it's not, because at the end of the day, what's the reward? Oh, they did it all right, and it was exactly the story that I've read before.
Right, right.
$12 sure. Well spent. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, I want to be surprised by it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's my take. They're two very different storytelling languages. So let them each play to their strengths.
Okay, great. And all right. So at this point, we were going to be exiting out. However, from the looks of things, Juan is MIA. So instead of that, we're just going to bring Raph on, and we're going to have a final segment with one more guy on, and that would of course be Raph, a regular here on Comic Timing. You all know him very well. So let's actually exit out of this segment. On the next segment, what we're going to be having is two audio comments, one from the Weekly Comic Book Spotlight guys, which of course would be John Mayo and Bob Breitel, and one from Heath Holland, and we'll get further into our own thoughts. So we'll be back in about, I'd say about 5 seconds your time and possibly about 2 minutes our time.
Oh, I know. The Geeks Unite podcast. That's the fans of Comic Timing right there.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
And Equinox.
And you can find us at geeksunite.libsyn.com. Yeah, that's right. All right, here we are for part two, and actually David just got the Con Ed guy at the door, so let's say our goodbyes to him. Well, first of all, David, thanks for joining us again, man, and it's been a lot of fun.
I'm sorry, one thing. Thanks again for having me. Got to jump off, and good luck with the rest of the show.
Okay, great. All right,
okay,
take care.
Bye.
Okay. All right, there you go. That's David. Actually, he just got the Con Ed guy at his door, so that's why he has to head out. So it will be the four of us for the rest of the show. It will be Jason joining us for a second segment here, and Raph is joining us right now. Obviously, the co-host of Geeks Unite. His other co-host, Juan, is MIA. However, you'll hear what we did to him at the end of the episode. What's up, Raph?
Oh, you know, that co-host, a little shifty. No shifty.
Yeah, see, because David didn't say it once the entire episode, I guess you got to fill in for him, right?
Yeah, no, it has to be said every time David D's around. But, you know, I'm actually surprised you guys called me at this time because I thought I'd get called 3 o'clock in the morning going, we finally finished with Sean and Jim. You still want to do it?
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of surprised myself. So we're the lucky ones. I'm amazed that it happened as quickly. Although I think it was the fact that Jim was kind of tired. He let me know in a PM that you're not going to have to worry about me talking that much because I had a very exhausted week. I'm like, okay, that'll work. So we'll actually get done in 40 minutes.
But you know what's amazing about those two guys?
Jim said that or Sean did?
Jim did.
Jim.
Okay, well, Sean's usually. But what's amazing about those guys is they love everything about DC. I mean, I wish I had that unbridled enthusiasm for the big two. You know, where I wasn't as so skeptical about things. But it seems like they find the silver lining in every single thing. I mean, they were last. I guess it was episode 51. They were just gushing over Amazon's attack, and I'm thinking, wow, man, it would be great to see the world in that light, wouldn't it? That every comic you read was just that entertaining.
Right.
I listened to that and I said, wow, it'd be great if I believed everything that I read like they do.
Exactly. Right.
Hey, well, yeah. they're awesome, and they do the best DC Comics podcast out there. So I'm not sucking up, and I'm not afraid he's going to hit me with his mace. I just have to say that.
My Amazon's attack thing is going to be on 51C. It just got moved back. So
okay,
you'll hear my hateful thoughts there.
Okay.
So Sean and Jim are the Indie Spinner Rack anthology.
Pretty much.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say I owe Dr. Nord some love because I actually bought about 2,000 DC comics from him off eBay in the last couple months. So,
very nice.
So
oh my God.
Nice way to catch up.
What'd you buy?
I'll see. I bought the entire JLA run that started with the Morrison, but the entire series, not just the Morrison part. I bought the entire Green Arrow run that had the Mike Grell stuff. Bought the entire Titans run that started the Wolfman and Perez and all the way through, and something else. But either way, he sold them to me for a song, so I wish he was selling more of his collection.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, at this point, I think it'd be best to start this off with yet another audio comment, as we have two more to go here. This one is from our good friends Bob Breitall and John Mayo, and well, here we go with that. Their thoughts on comic book universes, ready to go here. So listen in and enjoy.
Hi, this is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall
from the Weekly Comic Spotlight podcast.
The question at hand today is, what makes comic universes work? How important continuity is to a consistent universe? And what are some of our favorite comics universes? So what do you think, John? What makes a comics universe work?
I think a lot of what makes it work is continuity, because really that's what defines a comic book universe. It's more than just a collection of stories. It's collections of stories that have a history, that have ramifications, characters that interact, that grow over time, change over time. And, I mean, it's something that sounds really easy to do, but it can be very difficult to do. And we've seen cases where, like in the Marvel Universe, where it just kind of organically happens. And we've seen other cases where it's almost manufactured and the universe is designed out. Personally, I kind of favor the organic aspect. It just feels more natural at times.
Yeah, I agree. I think that without the continuity, it's not really a comics universe. It's just a mixed collection of comics that are published by a single company. An example of that might be, and there were a couple that crossed over with one another, but remember First Comics from way back when?
Yeah.
You know, they had Grimjack, they had Star Slayer, they had E-Man. There was a whole bunch of different comics, but each one of them almost had its own identity. And I never really got a feeling that there was a First Comics universe. They did some stuff with Grimjack with that Munden's Bar and the Nexus and stuff, but that was kind of manufactured, as you said, way long into the publishing history there. Whereas you take something like the Malibu Ultraverse or the Valiant universe, and you definitely had a consistent feel and a real sense that these universes held together and they were all stories taking place in that one shared universe.
Well, and it's funny because I would think both of those are kind of a little on the manufactured side. I mean, they were clearly set up to be a consistent universe, and aspects of that were built-in interconnections with some of the Ultraverse titles and things of that nature. But it was done well because it was used as a way to enhance the story, not as any sort of limitation on the story.
Right.
And, I mean, I think one of the best examples of a publisher that has lots of titles and a few different universes is Image, because you've got kind of the Kirkman universe where he's sharing characters between his titles. You've got kind of the Image Central universe, which kind of sort of crosses over with Kirkman's, kind of not, but it's on a as-convenient basis, which is all fine and good. I've got no problem with that. But that's a very different feel, like you were saying, with the Ultraverse. I would also say CrossGen, Valiant, and, well, the New Universe, too. I mean, almost any of Jim Shooter's universes usually have a kind of a guiding force and a guiding vision, and things flow and feel consistent across them. And that's just fun, because it gives you some idea what to expect, and it allows writers, not to use a shorthand, but to build on things from other creators. And that can be just a lot of fun to read, and something where if you like one of the titles, you know you've got this whole literal universe of stories to go explore.
That's true, and even something like the short-lived Broadway universe that Jim Shooter was involved in, that had a definite look and feel to it, that you could tell it was a consistent universe, and I liked that. Now, I don't like every universe Shooter's created. That Warriors of Plasm stuff that he did, that was pretty weak, but I did enjoy Valiant. I did enjoy the new universe when it was coming out, well, for the most part, and I did enjoy a lot of the Valiant stuff as well until it got kind of video gamey out near the end, and it strayed from the original vision, I think.
Well, I'll certainly concede that there were moments in both the new universe and the, was it the Defiant one that had the Warriors of Plasm?
Yeah.
That were not high points. But one thing I will credit Jim Shooter with is each of his universes had an artistic style and feel to it, to where just by looking at the comics, there was a sense of consistency and uniformity to it. Again, without, you know, really constraining and hampering the artists. Whereas you look at some of the stuff in DC and Marvel, and just between issues of a given title, the art style can change kind of drastically, and sometimes that knocks me out of the story. I want the feeling of familiarity.
I can agree with you on that, because I've noticed that some of the things that bother me in Marvel or DC mainstream books is when there's a radically different art style employed on a book. And while I might really love that particular artist's style, when they're doing some completely disconnected, independent, or side book, it really kind of bothers me in some way when that art style is used in a mainstream book, because it takes me out of that shared universe feel.
Yeah.
That's why 52 worked so great. You know, when you look at 52, there were a lot of different hands on the art chores for that, with the notable exception of, I think, one issue in there that really seemed to be a departure. There was a relatively consistent look and feel across that entire series.
Well, and that goes towards Keith Giffen acting as kind of an art director for the series and that, you know, kind of subset of the universe. And I agree, that's an excellent example of a comic book universe really working well and them drawing the power out of having that big tapestry to play with.
So obviously we both love Marvel and DC. What are some of our other favorite universes?
I'm going to go with the Valiant stuff.
Right.
I was a big fan of a lot of what they did in some of the kind of second-tier titles of Hardcore, The Second Life of Dr. Mirage, and that was one that I was really sorry to see that universe kind of go away.
I will second that. I really enjoyed that. Now, how about CrossGen? I really, myself, was a huge fan of CrossGen, even though that was relatively structured and manufactured. I just thought that they were a huge breath of fresh air when they came along.
I would agree with that entirely. It was one where they had a vision. Sometimes I didn't necessarily always agree with it, but it had consistency, and not only did they have that on the story side, but they had that kind of internally in their structure. One of the things that made that universe so dynamic and so exciting at times was the fact that all of the creators were in-house and could just walk across the hall or whatever and say, hey, what do you feel about doing this, or what do you think of my idea on this, or can we borrow this character? And that was something that really kind of changed the rules of how a shared universe could be done. That was another one I was sorry to see go away, because I think if it had stayed on course, it could have been a great universe.
Now, how about the Malibu Ultraverse prior to Marvel acquiring that and disassembling it, essentially?
Yeah, prior to Black September. I really like that one, too. Now, part of this is I'm just a huge fan of superheroes, so if I can get an alternate universe from some other company that's got cool things going on, I'm all for it. And the Ultraverse was no exception. Prime was really cool. I liked the all-new Exiles.
I loved The Strangers. That was my favorite book in the Ultraverse, The Strangers. But Prime was a very interesting idea, too.
Well, and this was a case where they got some really top-name writers that I think weren't getting enough work at Marvel and DC, and kind of let them just cut loose and do some fun stuff.
Any others that come to your mind off the top of your head? I mentioned Broadway before. I really liked Fatale and Powers That Be that came out from that very short-lived universe.
I liked aspects of the Milestone universe. And another one I would go kind of way back on would be, I don't know if Eclipse really had its own universe, but certainly the subset of it with DN Agents and Crossfire. I particularly enjoyed.
That's true. I like that. There was another subset. I don't think it really crossed over that well, but when they had that Next Wave.
Yeah.
And Airboy, and a lot of those kind of characters also crossed over with one another, and that was another fun alternate universe.
I would also go with the Justice Machine Elementals universe from back in the day.
Ah, yeah, another great one.
So, I mean, there's plenty to choose from these days. I mean, just over at DC, they've got 52. I've totally lost count how many they have over at Marvel. I mean, just Exiles alone has a few thousand, I think.
Yeah. So I think to sum it up, I think we're both big fans of different comics universes. We don't certainly have any kind of a problem keeping a whole bunch of universes straight in our heads, but I believe we're also agreed that continuity and consistency is a key to our enjoyment of any one of these universes.
Most certainly, because the continuity is what, again, defines these universes, and from my perspective, it's really what makes the stories matter. If there's no continuity, that means there's no ramifications, there are no consequences for any of the actions in any of the stories, and if there's no consequences or repercussions, why bother reading the story to begin with?
That's true.
You know, I'm a big fan of continuity, when used well.
Okay, so once again, Ian, thanks for the topic. It's a great one. And congratulations on 50 episodes of Comic Timing.
We are anxiously awaiting the 51st.
Hey, well, I'm anxiously awaiting more episodes of Comic Timing, too. So I want to thank Bob Breitel and John Mayo for that wonderful audio comment. That was 10 minutes well spent. That's like a whole mini episode of the weekly spotlight right there. And, I mean, these guys have done a lot for the show in the past, so I thank them for putting this together. That was a lot of stuff that we have plenty of stuff to talk about now, for sure. I think we'll start off with Raph here, since, well, he's new to the call, so we might as well have him talk for a while. Give us your thoughts on what they just brought up. Specifically, I guess, the universes they brought up, if you have anything to say about them, you can go ahead and do so.
I do remember a lot of the universes they talked about, but seeing as how I got into comics in the late 90s, I only know vagaries about them. Like, the Malibu stuff, I remember picking up an issue here and there. I've heard a lot about Valiant and Broadway and Defiant, but I've never read any material from them because I honestly just don't go bargain bin diving for these books.
Right.
From a personal standpoint, I guess this is where my perspective comes in, because you guys have talked universes to death. Like, I'm trying to create a universe, and the way they talk about, I mean, they really got into how a good universe should be done. They were talking everything. I mean, in some cases, they're talking about universes that didn't necessarily connect they only connect in name only. And they really got into, like, how it should be, how each of these universes put the details in to make it so that each book felt like a part of each of the universes they were involved in. So, I mean, I really wish I had read a lot of stuff they had talked about, but I've only read, like, anything that's come up in the past 10 years. So.
Right. Specifically, what they were talking about is that I guess they said that continuity is important to actually get a universe going. That if there is no continuity, it is just a collection of stories, which is important to me for a universe because, well, hell, I mean, if you're just going to tell a couple stories here and there, you're an imprint. You're not a universe. That's a major difference that a lot of people don't seem to get a lot of. In independent comics, they say, like, hey, we're going to start a brand new universe here. And then they have, like, four titles come out that are all under the same imprint, but they don't really cross over. That's not a universe, that's an imprint.
Yeah, that definitely should be pointed out. I mean, because some people tend to just, like, as if it's coming out from a certain company, it's a universe. I mean, even you look at Image, not all their stuff, certainly not all their stuff is in the same universe. I don't think their main characters are even in the same universe. They're all in separate, like, there's a Spawnverse, there's a Savage Dragonverse, so.
Yeah.
Raph, we already talked about that.
Oh, yeah. I figured.
Don't worry about it. We can talk about things for a second time because everything has a new take once you get into it. But, Jason, your thoughts on their audio comment?
Well, first of all, I mean, just like the last segment, we should probably have played the audio segments after we got to talk because these guys pretty much steal our thunder every time out. But
oh,
Now.
No, it's Bob and John are great. I mean, those guys are, you know, the grizzled vets and probably have combined owned just about every comic published in the last, 40, 50 years. So
right.
It's always awesome to hear them talk about stuff, and I'm really enjoying their podcast as well, the comic book page. I mean, Image is a really interesting one because, I mean, as a Marvel fan growing up, and then obviously I read indies now, but pretty much for a good 20 plus years, I just, you know, I read core Marvel superhero books. It seems to me that this notion of continuity universe is somewhat forced by some of the smaller publishers, you know, because they feel the need for it because DC and Marvel have such a strong universe. But let's not forget that, you know, that was somewhat of an organic process for both. I mean, DC especially, I mean, remember, DC is really a collection of a bunch of different publishing companies and properties. And I think although they've had their fits and starts, they've done a pretty tremendous job of pulling those together for all intents and purposes. You know, Marvel was a little more cohesive from the start because, you know, Stan was obviously created most of the iconic characters that exist today. But, you know, but even Marvel, I mean, I think that, you know, the fact that the universe has broadened over time simply because it's been successful and they've had more stories to tell. Image is, you know, Raph brought up Image, and I think that's a fascinating one. I don't know if you guys have read that Image book that Tomorrow's put out by George Kuri, but I recommend it, especially if you were a fan of the 90s. When those guys all got started with Image, you know, they, as you probably know, each of them owned their characters, you know, and really they each had their own little mini studio imprint that kind of was under the Image umbrella. And it was fairly loose. It was much looser than I think a lot of people remember. And they had one rule, which is to say that any of the other guys could use their characters, but only if they used them in such a way that that was okay with the creator, and that, you know, they really had no rights to those characters unless they got the okay of the person that created it. So, I mean, I think from the start, when you have that sort of ownership issue, financially it made sense for those guys to do that. And guys like McFarlane have really capitalized on that Spawnverse. But I think that kind of really limited the idea of, you know, a truly cohesive, sustainable universe. I mean, it just was kind of doomed from the start. And I think they've pretty much fully abandoned that now. I mean, obviously, you know, as I think Raph mentioned, they pretty much are now just an indie publisher now, where they really just take a flat fee and put out books from different creators. So I just think universes are great, and that's what we're here to talk about. But I think it's also, we can't underestimate the organic nature of a universe building over time versus trying to, you know, come out with a bunch of titles and saying, all right, this is a brand new universe. I mean, that's never really worked for me personally. I was not that big a fan of Valiant, not a huge cross-gen had some good titles, but I wasn't a huge fan of that. I mean, for me, I've always appreciated the history that goes into creating a universe.
Yeah, well, one of the problems, and again, we talked about this a little bit in the last segment, but one of the problems with having multiple imprints is that when you do the crossovers with multiple imprints, it's hard to know whether or not you're ever going to be able to print that again. You know, and I mean, I made that statement before, but I'll give you an example here. I have a trade paperback that Tim Seeley did back in the day. It was a comic book for Devil's Due, back when Devil's Due Publishing was still a part of Image, called Love Bunny and Mr. Hell. That was the name of the comic book. And it had a crossover issue with Savage Dragon. That one now is just a crossover issue. At that point, I think they were trying to work Devil's Due into the Image verse, but obviously that didn't happen because Devil's Due decided, let's do our stuff on our own. They broke off from them, so be it. That's the way it happened. Devil's Due is better off now, I think, for it. But this will probably never get reprinted unless they get permission from Image Comics to print it again, because it's a crossover issue that no longer has relevance. I mean, they're not in the same universe anymore. This is just a guy walking into a book. That's it. You know, it doesn't have any real depth anymore when you think about it, because this is just not the case anymore. They're not in the same plane anymore. They're in different places.
Right.
Brent, what about you? Give us your thoughts on the audio comment.
I thought it was great. I mean, I echo everything you guys said. They mentioned everything, every universe. They even mentioned some I'd never heard of before. I don't remember them now because this is the first time I heard them, but it was awesome.
Yeah.
We stole Brent's thunder.
Yeah, well, that'll happen every now and then. I mean, he steals mine all the time, so it's only fair.
Yeah, it's only fair.
Uh-huh. Right, sure. So yeah, let's actually go into, I know that Jason wanted to touch on some of the alternate realities. Now, I did an alternate reality episode like ages ago, but we're going to talk more about alternate reality universes as opposed to just, you know, throwaway stories here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we had in, for example, I don't know if you guys remember the Mutant X book that came out for a while. That was a full,
absolutely, sure.
It was a full thought out universe that happened inside of Marvel U.
Mm-hmm.
However, once they stopped publishing Mutant X, there went the universe. You know, it's still out there, but you never see it anymore. And
you saw it in a little arc in Exiles, which is pretty much. I mean, that's Exiles has been one of my favorite titles for a long time, just because of that. You kind of get these little glimpses of these little pocket Marvel universes that don't exist anymore, and they've gone to the new universe. They've gone to they've gone to the Mutant X world. They've gone to Age of Apocalypse, Days of Future Past. They've gone to even the MC2 universe. That fit and start that happened a few years ago that never really took off. So I mean, that's what I love about Exiles. I was choking up seeing the January solicitations because they're ending Exiles and they're starting a relaunch with apparently a whole new direction, whole new characters, and it's written by Chris Claremont and it's drawn by Tom Grummett. So my Exiles buying and reading may be finally coming to an end, and it makes me very sad.
Tom Grummett's going to bring me to the title because I'm a huge fan of his work and have been for quite some time. He has that old-fashioned style I love to see in art. But my main issue with this, and I'm going to go on a mini rant here that will hopefully only last about 3 or 4 minutes, but yeah, exactly. That's how much of a rant I have to go on right here. Chris Claremont is an individual that is incapable of using characters he did not create. Now, why am I saying this? Because the minute he came on to Exiles, what did he do? He brought on Psylocke from our universe. Did he have to do this? No, because we had a group of heroes from alternate realities that were working perfectly fine, and I think the Exiles works best when you have characters that were not from our universe. It was okay when they had Beak on the team, but I was glad that ended after a while. What he seems to be doing now, the one character I know for certain is going to be in this new Exiles, is Sage from our universe.
Oh, really?
Yet another character that he is in love with. All right? This dude, if he was capable of marrying a character, chances are there would have been a wedding already between him and Sage. He is so head over heels for this character. He brought her into Extreme X-Men. He brought her into New Excalibur.
New Excalibur. Yeah.
Now here she is in New Exiles. She follows him like a frickin' plague. And I really would love to see Chris Claremont not bother with bringing in any of his little pet characters just once, to see whether or not he can write a book and have it still be good. All right.
If he's writing it now, why are they relaunching it to begin with?
Because he wants to have a team that he started from the beginning. It's
so,
very, very obvious.
Yeah, I think
it
comes, for some
what
reason,
is
sure
they on now?
They're going to end it with 100, and then they have a one shot, which is kind of relaunching it in a new direction.
Yeah,
I don't know this to be factual, but my supposition on this is that for some reason they feel duty bound to give Claremont an X title, even though it's been a long, 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 long time since he wrote a good one.
Right.
And I guess with the major X Men disassembled that we're about to see, and all the major titles are going to get pretty massive relaunches with new teams. I guess we can safe to assume that New Excalibur is going to be done for, and I guess they need to stick Claremont somewhere so they figure he can probably do the least amount of harm by giving him a book that's kind of hopping around different universes so he can't muck things up. But I mean, that's just my supposition, but it seems like they're basically giving him a little sandbox carved out to play with as he sees fit.
Well, he's off of New Excalibur as of, I think, four issues down the line. The guy who wrote Wisdom is going to be writing it, and that's going to bring me over to New Excalibur. Because, well, I've heard wonderful things about Wisdom. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, even though I have 4 out of 5 issues. Once I sit down and read that, I'm sure I'm going to love it. This guy seems like a wonderful writer. He's written Doctor Who episodes that I've really enjoyed. So I'm looking forward to his stuff. Claremont, though, you are right. They give him his little piece of the universe to work with and just sit him down and say, all right, fine. As long as you don't touch anything else, we're okay. And that's the way it's definitely going here. He gets to start things from the beginning, but so be it. But let's talk about, I guess, specifically, what were some of your favorite universes that happened inside of other universes? I guess I'll go DC, Marvel, whatever you want to bring up, and we'll start with you, Jason.
Well, I guess I'll probably just stick with Marvel because, as I said in the last segment, I'm somewhat new to the DC world, so I can't pretend to really have the depth of knowledge. I'll let you guys kind of pontificate about DC, but I mean, Marvel, there's actually been a bunch. I'd say probably my most favorite of the bunch was actually the New Universe. I love the New Universe. I was giddy when they relaunched it as New Universal, but it seems like that's kind of, although they technically haven't stopped New Universal, I haven't seen a new title solicited in a long, long time. I think that the shame of New Universe, the beauty of New Universe was that it was a completely new set of characters, which was great. It wasn't just a reimagining. The downfall, though, unfortunately, was just that as well, which is to say that basically Shooter lost funding and he had a little bit of a political battle inside of Marvel, and he really lost support, so they couldn't pay the top-notch artists and writers, and then the universe just kind of fell apart. But that was my favorite. I thought, you know, to get started, DP7 was a great title. Really, Star Brand was great. That was some early JRJR work, so I love that. Let's see, another one that I really enjoyed was, I guess they call it Earth 712 these days, but that was the Squadron Supreme, the original
right.
Squadron Supreme
world.
Yeah, that was a great one. Those people who haven't read that original Squadron Supreme maxi series really should go out and pick it up. I think it's traded these days, but you can find it cheap in the back issue bins as well. I mean, that was really fantastic because that was kind of a reimagining Elseworlds tale of what the world would be like if superheroes emerged, but then they felt compelled to take over and run the world to make it a utopian society. So that was great. And then being a huge X fan, I mean, you know, probably of all of the main parts of the Marvel world, the one that seems to continue to play with alternative, you know, realities and actually rolls them back into continuity is the X world. You know, they've had Age of Apocalypse and Days of Future Past, and they've had that Ascaniverse, which is where Cable's from, and House of M. I mean, for me, I think the one that I enjoyed the most was actually Age of Apocalypse. I mean, I know that kind of has a bad tone to it because it was very 90s and the artwork was very over the top and whatnot. But actually, I thought that was a pretty creative series when it came out, and I like some of the characters from there very much. In fact, Blink is from Age of Apocalypse, and she's obviously the main protagonist in Exiles, and I love her. I think she's one of my favorite characters. So, you know, those are the three I probably like the most. I'll let you guys banter for a bit, and we can get back to maybe revisiting some of the ones that I dislike a lot because there are plenty of those as well.
Right. Brent, we'll go to you.
The one I really, really liked and just can't get out of my head recently is the Superman Red Son in that 6-issue miniseries by Mark Miller. Probably the best thing Mark Miller's ever done, I guess, other than the original Ultimates run. What I liked the most about that was everything was completely different because they were all Soviets and Batman was fighting as Soviets and Wonder Woman was like a supreme bitch or something like that. It was just awesome. But
hold on. Before you continue, how is that different than today's world?
Wonder Woman's not a supreme bitch.
Well, it depends on who's writing her, I guess, because sometimes she can be a little shifty.
Frank Miller. Stupid sperm banks. I hate you all.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Raph. All right.
I was going to point to Brave and the Bold number 7 where she tells Power Girl to stop fighting the mummies.
All right. Go on to what you were saying before.
Okay. Well, what I really love about that one is just the way that he ended the book. He ended the book like Superman takes over the Soviet world or whatever. Takes over the world. He's like Emperor Superman. And something goes wrong, and I guess the world starts getting destroyed, similar to not right away, but like it goes down that Superman's like this god, and then it goes forward like thousands of years in the future, and there's like Lex Luthor's descendant, and I don't know what he's called now, something like LL,
Jor-El.
Similar to Jor-El kind of thing,
yeah.
And it turns out that the world is dying, so he sends his only son out into the world or whatever, so it's kind of like he's putting this Soviet world into our world, and you know, is this like our predecessor to Krypton? Is this what Krypton was, kind of thing? It just like boggles the mind, that ending, and it's really not a giveaway because there's so much more to that story. It's just kind of this last little bit at the end, but I just love that whole thing about that.
I got a backstory for you for that because Mark Miller did an interview about that. Grant Morrison actually gave him that ending. And what happens is – we're going to spoil it?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So what happens is Superman fakes his death. Lex Luthor's victorious. Lex Luthor leads America and the rest of the world to a golden age. Superman is dead, quote unquote, but he's around as like a Clark Kentish type. He lives forever, and basically this is based on actual science. Our sun is eventually going to shrink, become red, and then dissipate. And
yeah, that's
so
what it was.
He lives to the future, and then he sees the descendants, and it's actually the whole plot is Jor-El sends his son Kal-El into the past. So that Superman in Red Sun is from the future, our future, and it's a time paradox.
My god.
Yes, it's
mind-blowing.
Dude.
It's Grant Morrison.
That is a brilliant idea. Well, it's an idea of Morrison, but delivered by Miller, which
exactly
in general it's a dime or two nickels in another. You know, that's the way that they are. They both have the capabilities of coming up with something insane like this because they've worked together before. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
All I have to say is Skrull Kill Crew.
Yeah.
and you see what these minds are capable of doing when they're together. But I need to read this. I haven't read this title before. Now that it's coming up in 52, in the 52 universes, I'm going to have to definitely go out there and finally get this trade.
What other thing I really liked was Batman Thrill Killer. It's Howard Chaykin and Dan Brereton. It's kind of like this painted artwork, but it's not as realistic as Alex Ross. Mm-hmm. And it's a completely different, like, Gotham City. Two-Face is a gangster, but it's like there's like a Two-Face girl or something. The Joker's a girl and Two-Face is a guy. The main Batman in Gotham City is Batgirl, and Robin is her like sidekick / boyfriend type thing.
Okay.
And Batman doesn't really come in till like the very end of the original miniseries, and then they had this one shot after the miniseries, which kind of continued the story, where you see Bruce Wayne become Batman. But Bruce Wayne in this like crime noir Sin City like world is like a private detective. He's not, you know, he doesn't become Batman because his parents died. He becomes Batman because of other circumstances.
Yeah.
So that was really cool.
One of my alternate universes that I'm a huge fan of, and again, this could be the name of a superhero porn movie if you tried hard enough, JLA Nail. it's
that is a good one. I've read that one. That's awesome.
It's very good because I don't know if you've read this before, Jason, but think of it this way. What would happen to the world if Ma and Pa Kent got a flat tire on the way to save Kal-El?
Huh, interesting.
And
so what does happen?
What happens?
It falls apart because Superman's the man!
What happens is it's a world without Superman. However, it's not a world without Kal-El. He does get rescued. However, he gets rescued by the guys who run Shady Maples in Pennsylvania, pretty much.
Amish.
The Amish. He gets rescued
in Kansas.
By,
yeah, how's that work?
I don't know. I have a feeling he probably just landed in Pennsylvania or whatever, or he got found in Pennsylvania, or he flew all the way to Pennsylvania. I don't know what the hell happened.
It's alternate world.
Yeah. But there are Pennsylvania Dutch all over the place, so it's possible that might have just been it. They are just the Dutch. They're the Amish. That's it. But he gets found by them, so he grows up away from society, so never gets the idea of becoming Superman until later on in life. The Justice League is still around, obviously, but they're a very different Justice League. And the world is very different because it's all being run by Lex Luthor. Everything is entirely messed up. I don't want to give away all the spoilers in this one because there's a bunch of twists and turns. But if you ever get a chance to either take it out from the library, which is actually what I did for the first one that I actually picked up on the JLA Another Nail, which was the second porn movie, go ahead and pick it up. It's actually really, really good. And one of the best things Alan Davis has ever done. Because
I'm a huge Alan Davis fan. So
he is the writer.
I'm a huge. Okay, I'm a huge Alan Davis. So.
He's the writer and artist.
Fantastic!
You're in for fun. You're definitely in for
fun.
You
just sold me.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
So if you get a chance to get it, it's well worth it. I'd love to hear your response once you actually do read it. But I consider this one a universe as opposed to just a story because there was a sequel to it. So you do have a coherent story going on. Which is actually one of the differences I make between just alternate realities and alternate universes, because if you only hear from something once, that's it. It's a story.
Right.
You know, if you hear from something multiple times, then it becomes a universe.
That's interesting, because let me ask you, I mean, then would you consider, say, like, you know, Gaiman's Marvel 1602, would you consider that a universe?
Yes.
Because
yes, I would.
And is that because they've made a really poor sequel to that, or is it because... I mean, why would that be a universe? I mean, essentially,
they expanded upon it. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
Even if it wasn't good, and again, that's up to the debate because I've heard people actually say that they enjoyed the Fantastic Four one that came out later on.
Right.
So I'm not going to make any judgments on that. But the fact that they decided to expand upon it, and the fact that it exists now separate from the original universe it's in, it actually has its own designated, alternate reality universe now.
Mm-hmm.
Says to me that they tried to make this its own universe, and they're still telling stories in it, so it's obviously its own universe. That's what it has to be.
Okay.
To be. You have to build upon something in order to make it a universe.
That's fair. So then I guess would you not consider things like the future we saw in, the X-Men Days of Future Past, would that not necessarily be a universe since it's just an alternate future and we've not seen it?
It just doesn't, that's okay. Just an alternate future to me. They've used that so many times in the past. They've used like mm-hmm. four different versions of it. That's not a cohesive universe to me. Just like what John and Bob were saying earlier on. There has to be some sort of continuity to make it a universe. And that's the way I feel about alternate realities. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example here. Alternate futures for Legion of Superheroes. If we just saw one throwaway Legion of Superheroes that was different than all the other ones we saw before, that's not an alternate universe to me. That's just an alternate future. What we see, though, from the other Legion of Superheroes that we've gotten, we've seen actual runs which, you know, establish that these are heroes. We've had our own characters cross over into them as well, which proves that they are an alternate universe along with an alternate future, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Yeah. Now,
disqualified.
Woohoo! Raph, we didn't get yours yet. What are some of your favorites?
Let me do one from each category. My favorite one that gets dumped on a lot is for Marvel, I guess would be the MC2 universe.
Okay.
Because I kind of like that whole alternate future thing, and we finally get to see what happens to Peter Parker's baby, and just to see that they that the heroes, you know, I like being able to move on. I like legacy characters a lot. I mean, I love Superman, and Superman is never going to not be Superman, but I like seeing other characters progress, and, you know, Peter Parker has to retire eventually.
Right.
Captain America can't be Captain America forever. I like seeing that progression, and I thought it was a nice idea. Maybe some of it didn't work out the way, like, didn't work out too well, but I did enjoy the concept of it.
Right.
For a non-Big 2 one, I have to say the Wanted universe.
Ooh, yeah.
Because it's such a spoof of the DC and Marvel universes, mm-hmm. but it's its own world. I have so much fun with it, because they do basically what the Exiles do. They world hop, and they just, like, they commit crimes in other universes where they're heroes, and it's just so much fun.
Yeah,
it's one of the best. It's one of Miller's best non. I think it probably is his best non Big Two work.
Or you know, you mentioned Wanted. How about you just mention what Wanted originally was? Top 10. Because I mean, top 10.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Top 10 to me was the first Wanted. I mean, Wanted did its own thing, sure. But who here has read Top 10 before? Am I the only one, or other people have other people read it on the call?
No, I read one of the few issues. I didn't read the whole thing.
Okay. Pretty much what just to describe it to you, it's basically Alan Moore taking everything he knows about pretty much every single comic book universe out there and jumbling it in together into a intergalactic police force.
I'm sold.
What he has is he has like different alternate realities all combined into, you know, there's a police force for every reality out there, mm-hmm. and the police for the specific universe that we're seeing are known as the Top 10. That's the way it is. What he's brought into it is there are moments when, like, for example, you can travel amongst the universes if you want. Some of the people from the Top 10 police force are from alternate realities, but at one point you see people go to like their Grand Central Station, and I believe the exact thing was travel on infinite Earths or something like that. Like it was a play on Crisis, basically. Crisis on Infinite Earths. It was like travel on Infinite Earths, and you saw like Earth 2 Superman or an analog to him in the background, and you saw like the Fantastic Four in the background, that sort of stuff. They play on so much fun in this. That's all it is. It's a bunch of fun. It's Alan Moore having a good time without having to worry about the limitations of a universe that's already established. So that's what Top 10 is. What Wanted did is it went a little farther than that. It basically is a mockery, a total mockery of the established universes. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. It's just, it's not flattering. Top 10 is flattering. This is not very flattering.
Well, it sounds to me like it's, I mean, it's, the current analog would be what we're seeing from Ennis and the Boys, right? I mean, that's its own little universe. It's hard to call it a universe because it's just Ennis's little play world, and, you know, it's just his title, and there's no other titles that play in that universe. But obviously, you know, it got booted from DC because it was all a bit too close to home, and then it was very reminiscent. Some of the analogs were very reminiscent of the DC icons.
Right.
And I think, frankly, I don't know if you guys are reading that, but I think since he's moved to Dynamite, I think while he probably didn't intend to be closely analogous to the DC icons, I think since they kicked him out, he started to move the book much, much more satirically against DC, probably on purpose, as a way to say F you.
I'm reading it.
And I think he's probably going to just go, right, and I expect they'll just continue to go from there and probably just get more and more sick because they kicked him out. So
all I have to say is Teen Titans Orgy.
Right. I gotta start beating that.
There's nothing quite like seeing analogs of characters you know very well doing sex acts that might be illegal.
Yeah.
But at least in 48 states.
This is The Boys. This is Garth Ennis's The Boys. The first trade is out, and I believe they're on issue 10 now or something like that? It's close to being done with the second trade. Pick it up. It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. One that I want to throw out there, I'm surprised nobody's mentioned it yet as a universe, the Fables universe.
Oh, interesting. I guess I don't think of that as a universe, but good point. I mean, I'm a huge, huge fan of Fables, so I have to say, and I think it's a masterpiece from start to finish. So,
right.
You know, it's interesting. I guess they have Jack of Fables now, which I'm actually not reading. I'm probably going to pick some of those up, you know, in trade, but I've not been reading that. Again, I guess, I mean, it's a universe in that it's got an expansive, you know, you can tell that Willingham's put a lot of thought in this and continues to evolve it. And it's got a deep, you know, history that I think he's done a good job of giving us the sense of there being a lot of history and continuity,
right.
Even though the reality is there really is no history or continuity because, you know, he created it, you know, with page one of issue one, right?
Sure.
But I guess what works for him is that it's based on a lot of public domain characters that we know so well. And he's been very clever in his ability to weave the fairy tales that we all grew up with a much more real world perspective on what they'd be like in sort of our Earth bound by our physics and that sort of thing. So it's just pure genius in my opinion.
And plus, like living in New York, it kind of makes me look at somebody twice now. It's like, wait a minute. Is that really a human, or is that actually the big bad
wolf
in disguise?
No, I'm not.
You sure, Raph?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You positive?
I'm sure.
All right, okay. Yeah, I don't believe you. living in New York, it's the same way I feel about Marvel a lot of the times. Like, I know the area so familiar that I see where they live, and I'm like, wow, damn. It's like, what if? Pretty much. It's like, what if that actually happened? Like, would anybody in New York notice if these oddballs moved in? Or is it just another universe, like, starting up?
Mm.
You know? It's just the way it goes. At this point, I'm going to play our final audio comment, and that's from Heath Holland. It's a nice short one. It's only about 3 minutes long. But let's give Heath his time here, as he's been on the show before. So here we go with Heath Holland's audio comment, straight from Heath.
Hey, this is Heath Holland, H007 on the forum. Ian asked me to be some part of the show somehow, to either be on the show or to send in some sort of a segment. I thought a segment would be the best thing, to send in some sort of an audio piece about what makes a universe, what makes a comic universe tick. And I have racked my brain over and over all day, all week, trying to think, what makes a comic universe tick? And I don't really know. But because Ian is awesome and he has a sweet butt, I'm going to try to think out loud and present some ideas, like maybe a professor does in college, because a lot of times they have no idea what they're talking about. But they say things like, is it this? Is it this? And it sounds like they know what they're talking about. So what makes a comic universe tick? Is it the continuity between the characters? The way they interact, the relationships between the characters? Is it the way that Reed Richards, Johnny Storm, Ben Grimm, Sue Storm interacts with, say, Peter Parker, Thor, Tony Stark, Captain America? Is that what makes a good comic universe? The way that one title flows into another title? I don't know. Is it the writer? Is it the way he presents the ideas and tries to unify everything? Is it years and years and years of continuity? Like, you know, Skrulls from the first few issues of Fantastic Four being brought up later, years and years down the line. Who thought that we would have Skrulls in the Marvel Universe in 2007 to 2008? I didn't, but that's okay. I like it. Anyway, so what of these things makes a cohesive universe? Or is it to have a small comic universe? Like, let's look at Invincible. It's tiny. It's, you know, every single character that's in that universe. You've got Invincible. You've got a few people. Now it looks like Astounding Wolfman is going to maybe cross over with that, or has crossed over with that. Is that a better universe than the Marvel Universe? I don't know. What about the DC universe with freaking 40 billion characters that have mothers and fathers that were the same hero that they were, you know, 87 years ago. You know, you've got 87 generations of friggin' Green Lantern. Is that a good continuity? What makes a good comic book universe? Well, I put these things to you and ask you to figure it out, because I have no idea what makes a good comic universe. And I imagine that about 12 to 15 to 20 other people have probably spoken either before or after me. It made a lot of sense, and it was great, and I'm going to go with what they said, because I really like what they said. Yeah. Hey, that was a good idea, you guys. That is what makes a good comic book universe. That's what makes it tick. Cool. All right. Well, Ian, thanks for letting me give my little thoughts here for a couple of seconds. Congratulations on 50 episodes, man. Please live through a restraining order, because I really feel like we should be together. Call me, please. All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Heath, all I have to say is that if you stop trying to climb my fire escape to the sixth floor of my apartment building, then we'll talk, okay? Because I feel really strange when I'm sitting there trying to play Wii at like 2 a.m. and I suddenly see these eyes just pop up, like following me across the room. It's really freaky, and I'm not quite sure if I like it. I might like it, but I might not like it. I'm just not quite sure at the point. And by the way, thank you for the compliment on my ass, because I don't get enough compliments about my ass. I feel pretty right now. I'm gonna turn this over to somebody else, because I'm getting this strange feeling right now. Raph, go ahead, talk. Or Brent, anybody.
I don't know if I want to be on another episode when he eats something. He kind of creeps me out.
Dude, Heath, in all seriousness, man, dude, you're the man. You're the man, all right? Because we needed to inject some Heath comedy into this show, and you just did it, all right? Because
and one more thing.
Yeah.
Heath said he's going to be at MegaCon this year, and I'm going, how am I going to guard my butt from him?
Well, dude, just make sure you bring that sword, and then you'll be fine.
Or I can just walk in front of you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I hope I'm going to be there. I hope I'm going to be there. I can't make any commitments yet, because if I don't have enough money, I obviously won't be able to do it, but I really hope I'll be able to make it there.
I hope you will, too.
Yes, but he did bring up some interesting points as Professor Heath Holland, so let's get into that. And one more time, check out Geek Brunch. It's over at comicbooknoise.com. Just search for Geek Brunch, and you'll be able to find it. It's plenty of fun, and I just listened to his episode from this past week, and that was actually really, really enjoyable. It's like sitting there at a coffee shop with a bunch of geeks. That's the best way to put it. But let's talk about what he just talked about. Raph, give us your thoughts.
Well, I think one of the best points he made is in saying that the people before him had made a lot of great points. I'd like to thank you for saying I made great points, Heath. That was very appreciated. I don't often get a lot of credit for my stuff. And that really helps. That really helps, Heath.
All right,
no,
Raph,
but seriously.
thanks for being on the show, Raph. Take care. We'll see you later. We're kicking you off the call, and you're never on the show ever again.
No, seriously. Okay. I think he made some good points, because, like, with the whole Green Lantern thing, I mean, that is a convoluted continuity. Does that make a universe unto itself?
Right.
I mean, what is a real universe? I mean, we were kind of talking about it. I kind of wanted to bring it up before, like, with the whole Why the Last Man thing. Is that a universe, or is it a self-contained world? So he did bring it up. He didn't really talk about his favorite universes, but he did talk about what makes a good universe and, like, what to consider when thinking about something as a universe. So that was his major point that I liked.
Well, along the lines of what he said, all I can think of right now is what is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me.
No more.
Yeah. No more. All right, let's get back to seriousness. Jason, your thoughts?
Based on what he said, yeah. Look, I mean, he basically obviously asked us to answer for him what a universe is, and we've been talking about that for some time.
Right.
Raph mentioned why. I mean, I don't consider Y a universe because, again, it's Brian K. Vaughan's story to tell, right? It's a story. I mean, it's based in a world that's obviously outside of our world, but I don't know that he has any plans of ever, you know, telling other stories that take place in that world.
Right.
Maybe if he does that, I kind of would reconsider it a universe. But it's a fine line because, you know, I mean, Preacher, right, that there have been other stories told in the Preacher world, the Hellblazer, there have been other stories told, you know, from characters that are in the Hellblazer world. So are they universes? I mean, I wouldn't. If you were to ask me before this conversation, I would have said no. They're just, you know, they're just kind of stories that have multiple characters, like almost like spinoffs in a TV show.
Right.
When I think of universes, I think of something that has a little bit more weight to it, a little bit either, and weight by weight, I mean either history or multiple characters that we care about,
right.
or the best of would be the combination of the two, which is what I think when you get back to the big two. I mean, that's why I think, you know, we care about them so much, is because they have history and they have, you know, multiple characters that we give a damn about. So,
right.
I don't know. It's a fine line. I mean, I think each person probably going to draw the line in a different way, but I think we could, you know, it's a little tangential to start calling things like Y and even Fables and Preacher and those sort of things universes.
I actually think of the Marvel Zombies right now as sort of an example of the difference between a universe and not a universe. With the Marvel Zombies, that's a universe because what they've done is they've crossed over now into multiple other universes. They had a crossover with the Ultimate Universe. They've had a crossover with the 616 verse. And they've had a crossover with a Dynamite Publishing universe that doesn't even exist outside of Army of Darkness. That's it. They crossed over with Army of Darkness, which isn't even a Marvel title. Right away, I'm thinking to myself, and the fact that there's another series coming out about that where we see a whole lot of what's going on in the Marvel Zombieverse that makes it an actual universe to me. With Preacher, I've never actually read Preacher, so I'm going to have to ask you this, Jason. Do they usually just stay in pretty much the same place? I mean, are they going like all over the universe? Do you find out more stuff about the universe that Preacher's in or just the characters?
It's pretty much a character tale, but I mean, you're talking about a very religious tale. So, I mean, obviously they deal with heaven and hell and, you know, and they travel the world. So, I mean, there are no other worlds per se, but again, I mean, they deal with heaven as being a corporeal place.
Right.
So, again, I mean, I say you could argue it's a universe because they've had, you know, other minis that are based on some of the other characters that were kind of background characters in the main series.
Sure.
But, you know, but beyond that, again, I would probably not call it a universe, although I think you could make a better argument for that being a universe than you could, you know, some of the other titles we've talked about.
Yeah. Brent, you want to make some comments on Professor Holland's wonderful speech?
I'm going to have to agree with what you guys are saying about why kind of not being its own universe. I mean, it is self-contained. It's its own story. Yes, if it takes place on an alternate Earth, but like any novel or anything, it's its own story. So I'll have to disqualify stuff like that, Preacher and Fables, from a universe. To me, a universe, I think of like a line of books that kind of tie together. Marvel, DC, Image, what Valiant and CrossGen had. You know, they had their own separate books with their own universes inside it, but once they started touching other universes in inappropriate places, to me, that's what makes a universe cohesive.
Okay, cool. All right, as we wrap up a very, very, very long show, as we're getting very close to the end here, as it is now, we began this marathon at 9 p.m. this night, and it is now 12:47. Sure, we're doing a two-parter, but I have been talking for a very long time, so we're going to have to end this. All right.
We've done this before.
Oh, yes, we have.
When me and Juan are on, it's usual. It's like, let's start at 10 and let's end at 4 o'clock in the morning.
I'm just glad that Juan's had a lot to say in this episode. You know, I mean,
he's been great.
We learned a lot.
Seriously, he's outdone himself.
We learned a lot about his family life. We learned a lot about, I think he had a dog named Scruffy when he was younger. It was very interesting and very touching. I'm not quite sure what it had to do with
his own universe now.
All 15 of his middle names.
Right, right.
And, you did get to hear his full name, that's true.
But yes, yeah, so let's end this off. I guess one final, let's just get everything wrapped up nice and simple here with a statement that you could try and make within, I guess, maybe a 30-second span from each of you, maybe even a bit longer. Let's wrap up everything that's been said already about what is essential to a comic book universe to you. And we'll begin with the guy who's been on as long as I have, Brent.
I think a comic book universe, what's essential is good, strong characters, characters that interact. I mean, characters that are written similarly across the board. I mean, you can't have Wolverine be a crybaby in one book and then a tough guy in his own. So you have to have some cohesiveness amongst the universe. And I think you have to tell stories with those characters outside of the main books. I mean, I think what helps make a universe is miniseries like Infinite Crisis or Civil War, where you get all the characters for some big slam-bang action. You put them against each other, or you put them against some common foe. And what it does is unites the universe and then splits off different stories so that the books can pick these up if they want, or if they don't, it's fine. You know, it just brings together the universe as a whole. So for me, I think that's what's essential. But essentially, I'm saying a crossover is necessary every once in a while. Because otherwise, then you're not really a universe. You're just a collection of books that happen to take place in the same place.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brett makes good points, and I think the two that I'd add are, I think, for a universe to exist and flourish, I think, in the comic book world, we need interactivity, right? So you need not all the time, but I think you need fairly commonplace interactions between characters that we care about and see in multiple titles. I think that's vital. And then to that end, even when they're not interacting with each other and just existing in their own titles, I think you need to have consequence. And what I mean by that is that if something happens to that character or some big story arc happens in that book, we need to at least have the notion that that has consequence outside of that book. So to use the latest, example, World War Hulk, I mean, obviously he's pretty much destroyed Manhattan and built a, boiler alert, he's built a, basically a Coliseum out of Madison Square Garden. Well, if I'm reading 10 other Marvel titles that take place supposedly in New York and they haven't even mentioned that the Hulk has destroyed half the city, that's to me sloppy continuity and it calls into question whether or not it really is a universe. So again, just to read, I think you need continuity and you need interactivity. I mean, those are the keys.
And Raph.
I think Jason and Brent have made some good points. I guess you do need continuity, but I mean, for someone who's starting out with a universe, if someone wants to do a universe that's fairly young, you don't necessarily have to have 150 issues of backstory. I mean, just allude to things though that you know, these two have had a past together. You don't need to flesh them out right now. You just let us know that it's there, and then eventually get to it. The sense of continuity, you do have to have these people interact. I mean, you can have six books put out by the same artist and writer from the same company, and they can have nothing to do with each other, and that's not a universe. A universe, there has to be interactivity. There does have to be interactivity. There does have to be this sense of belong in this universe together because of such and such reason. They've done these things together. They experience the same sort of stuff together that happens in the same place. There just has to be the sense of they're not just thrown in there, and they exist because they have to, and because it has to be because it's natural. I think some of the problems that have happened with Captain Marvel over at DC and other characters that have been taken over by Marvel and DC is that they've struggled to fit the characters, and sometimes they've had success and sometimes they've failed. I mean, the question was nobody up until 52 when he had that whole journey with Rene Montoya, but he's been around for at least 30, 40 years. So it is important to, if you're new universe, you have to just give us a sense of history, and if you're old universe, adding new people in, you have to find a proper way to do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's actually a good point that was just brought up, that Vertigo's an imprint. Wildstorm's a universe.
Right.
And that's what DC has right now, that the Ultimates have a universe, the Max is just an imprint. Because these are all separate stories, with Vertigo, with Max, that sort of stuff. With the Ultimate Universe and with Wildstorm, you're actually getting something that's trying to be a cohesive unit. Like, you'll have Gen 13 show up in Welcome to Tranquility. You'll have the Authority, show up all over the place still in Wildstorm Universe. And now, what's even weirder is that this Wildstorm Universe is part of the even larger DC Universe now.
The multiverse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like everything is connected with the DC Universe in one way or another. Vertigo's outside of that entirely. That's what they try to do. Just like in Max, you could have a Punisher War Journal title happen inside the Marvel U, but the Punisher Max title is not referenced at all outside of the Punisher Max title because it's just a Punisher title. That's it. It could happen in its own little bubble.
That's the bubble.
Yeah, it's the bubble. That's pretty much what it is. And yeah, I mean, I think we've touched on probably everything our minds could think of today. But I'm going to end off with my thoughts one more time on universes. It takes more than one story to make a universe. You can create a story, you can create characters, you can do whatever you want in your own book. However, if you expand upon that universe, if you expand upon that world, where we get to know the history of the universe, where we get to know the characters, more than just the characters that were in that one book, if you get multiple titles going on, and we get to see everything that's involved within that place, well, then we're going to know what's going on for real. And that's going to make it a universe for me. So there's a difference between a story and a universe. We've made that very clear on this episode. And hopefully everybody by now has gotten that into their heads. I want to thank everybody who has been a part of this get-together of people. And I want to thank everybody who's ever been on Comic Timing up until this point. Because you've made this show what it is today. And I especially want to thank Brent for stepping in, as obviously I've had many different co-hosts on the show, but Brent, you've helped me out a lot. I mean, a lot over the past, I guess, what, 6 months that we've been hanging out doing the show together. And I got to thank you for that, man. Definitely. I mean, you're a huge help. You are the co-host of the show. And it wouldn't be the same show without you, man.
Thanks. I had a blast.
Yeah. And to everybody else who's been on...
Hope that I'm helping you out.
Oh, dude. No, you definitely help me out. Every now and then, you're an ass. But what are you going to do? I mean,
that's love tonight.
I love you, awkward moment.
I love you, man. You're not getting my Bud Light, Johnny. who remembers that commercial? Am I the only one? Probably.
Yeah,
all right,
I think so.
Fine. But yeah. Also, I want to thank Jason for staying on as long as he did. Your first time on a show. And, dude, you brought a lot to the table, man. So I definitely want to thank you for that. And whenever you want to come back, dude, just holler.
It was a pleasure, boys. And just let me say again, congrats on 50 episodes. That's a crowning achievement of podcasting.
Yes, thank you very much. Yep. And I never got there with GeekSpeak, so I'm glad to get there with Comic Timing. And Raph, obviously, you've been on plenty of times over the past couple of months as well. I want to thank you for that. But most specifically, let's plug your ass. So what's upcoming on Geeks Unite?
The first double-digit episode of Geeks Unite, episode 10, I'm almost done with it.
Aren't I supposed to be on episode 10?
No, you're supposed to be on episode explicit. Which is something else.
Episode extreme!
I thought you promised me episode 10.
Yeah, well,
bastard.
Raph makes a lot of promises, and then
goes
ahead and breaks them. So what are you gonna do?
Yeah, Lois Lane still pissed off at me. I lied about that whole thing. Yeah.
Clark Kent is not really Superman, surprisingly enough. But even though Raph told you so, that's the way it went. But I want to thank the listeners as well, because without them, there wouldn't be a show. Because, you know, you guys come back and you listen to the episodes, and the listenership has grown over the past couple of months, and whoever stuck around, even people who didn't stick around, just thanks for listening when you did, because that's really all I can ask for at this point. Anybody who just wants to listen, just go ahead and do so. I do it for the love of it, and if I've got other people listening in, then there you go. So I want to thank you guys for that. I want to play, just before we go, quick promo here for Comic Book Noise, as they've been supporters as well, so here we go.
Hi, I'm Derek Howard, and I host the podcast Comic Book Noise. This is my first promo that I've ever recorded for the show, and I have absolutely no idea what to say. I was thinking I could talk about the regular show segments like the Random Comic Review, Comic Basics, and the ever-popular Top 5 list that nobody else in their right mind would think of, but I decided against it. Then I was going to talk about the special shows like DC 52, DC Countdown, and World War Hulk, but I didn't like that idea either. Finally, I decided to talk about the other shows in the feed, like Geek Brunch by Mike Myers and Heath Holland. But it didn't seem as though I could get across just how good those shows really are. So I'm going to give up and not do a promo until I know what I'm going to talk about. And you can be sure that it'll be good, not just some guy making a lot of noise. A lot of comic book noise. Wait a minute.
All right, that is the best promo I've heard so far, period. Because that's just that's brilliance right there. That's total brilliance. Check him out, comicbooknoise.com. He talks a lot of noise, but he's a pretty good guy. He's a pretty good guy. Derek's the man, all right? Check him out, comicbooknoise.com. All right, we're done here, so let me take it out. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com/forum. Graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And we're proud members of the League of Comic Book Podcasters. Check it out at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. Please send us iTunes reviews on iTunes. Graciously appreciated. Please dig us on dig.com. Also graciously appreciated. And please, if you get a chance, the Noisy Awards, People's Choice Awards, are now available to vote for. So if you want to vote for us for your favorite group comic book podcast, that would certainly be a very nice thing to do. You have until December 7th to vote, so go ahead and get your voting out there. So I'm going to let Brink and Raph say the end here because, well, that just seems fitting. So I'm Ian Levesine, and as always,
there's always time for comics.
Get you night.
You guys boots. Work. He starts listening to like
you were, weeks you were
before.
Saving yourself for ones that are divisible by 10.
Exactly. Hey. You know what it was? I bowled over Ian with my charming personality at CGS 300, so he had to act me out.
Exactly. That's all what it is. But Brent, think about it. You had just started listening to the show, and you just like randomly PM'd me on Skype, like, "Hey."
No, that is bullshit.
Oh,
I've been listening long before.
Come on.
That is such utter bullshit.
Well, fine. It was the first time you messaged me on Skype the same day you ended up on the show.
Yes, true. That's bullshit. I didn't just start listening.
If it's any consolation, Brett, I've listened to probably 15 episodes now in the last couple days, gearing up for this. So.
Oh, very nice.
Wow.
Very nice.
Brett, the host, no hosts, right? The co-host, no co-host? Is that what they call you?
Co-host, not co-host, co-host.
Right.
Sounds like a death warble.
Hey, Steve, I can't make it to the phone right now. Just leave a message. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. God bless.
Record your message after the tone. To send a numeric page, press 5. When you are finished recording, hang up. Or for delivery options, press pound.
Okay, right now we have two choices. We can either just have the show with Juan's voicemail and, you know, make it seem like he's there, or we could just leave an angry response. What do you want to do, Brent?
Angry response? Because, I mean, I was really excited to read his whole name. Juan Alberto de Vejez Estelgado, Conchita Consuela, Bogota Roboto, Mateo Ponce de Leon, Rodrigo Gonzalez Smith, Ortiz Iman. But I can't do that now. It's not here, so I say angry.
Okay, cool. Raph, you're his co-host on Geeks Unite. What do you want to do?
I got to deal with this afterwards, so I obviously want to go with the diplomatic approach.
Okay, yeah, see, you don't have a vote anymore. Jason, what do you want to do?
Okay, all right.
I've been to torture of the human soul in any way, shape, or form, and I don't really know him that well, so I'm good for whatever's going to piss him off the most.
Okay, cool. And David?
Juan ruined Christmas.
Juan, where the hell are you, dude? Seriously, you ruined Hanukkah also, you bastard. All right, well, at least you gave us something to put in the back of the show, dude.
In fact, you know what? He ruined Hanukkah with both spelling.
Yes, you ruined Chanukah and Hanukkah. Get back to us if you can, Juan. If not, it's just going in the back of the show. So, yeah, you suck. Bye.
And he would have ruined Kwanzaa, but he's not actually that sensitive. He was insensitive and not even ruining Kwanzaa.
And you'd never be that cool with
amazing.
Oh, my God. Wow, I'm actually... And right afterwards, I get a thing popping up. Skype call quality. How is your call quality? Your feedback will help us to improve our service.
Mine's that, too.
Okay, how do we sound?
Everybody talk, rap.
This is Batman.
Oh no, did Brent do his disappearing trick again?
I'm still here. I'm trying to think.
His neighbor's still
okay,
in the room.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure it's your neighbors didn't show up or girlfriend.
No.
Or a random squirrel, you know, anything like that.
What the fuck, man?
Well, great.
Sorry, that was my squirrel.
Great, great, great. Now I definitely have material for the back. Jeez. Oh my fucking god, dude. I don't think I've talked this long in like forever. Seriously. What was the last time we had a marathon like this?
The first time I was on.
When we did JSA 1 and 2.
God. Oh, God.
Yeah, in the first time Raph was on.
When you were still on Hot Recorder.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Aren't you glad I'm not on Hot Recorder anymore?